far is the 6-9 swing, man? You can shoot the 3.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, June 1st, 2009. I'm Adam Berry, the assistant sports editor and softball beat writer for Alligator Sports, once again podcasting from our hotel in Oklahoma City. And joining me today is...
Kyle Maestri, football beat writer and columnist.
All right, and we're off of an exciting day here in Oklahoma City. We were at ASA Hall of Fame Stadium for what felt like an eternity, watching two pretty solid softball games. We started off with the longest game in Women's College World Series history between Washington and Georgia. And by time, not innings. And it felt every minute of it, absolutely, considering we got there in the third inning and, you know, we sat through about 2 hours of it, so... We went from that into Florida's game. Florida played Alabama, and they came out with a very exciting 6-5 win off of Allie Gardner's grand slam in the bottom of the seventh with two outs. Just a ridiculous game there, Kyle. Do you want to give your input from it?
Yeah, it was really a good game to watch. The Gators, you know, fell behind quickly. They were up 2-1 after Kelsey Bruder hit a 2-run home run. And at least I kind of felt like, okay, that's the home run. That's the one home run. Stacey Nelson will just roll from there. Mm-hmm. That'll be that. But Alabama came back and put 4 on Stacey Nelson in the fifth inning, went up 5-2, held the lead for the entire game until the seventh inning. Bases got loaded, and we know what happens when the bases get loaded against Kelsey Dunn for the Gators. They hit a grand slam, and Allie Gardner hit the 4th grand slam off of Kelsey Dunn for the Gators in the last 2 seasons.
Yep. Megan Bush had one earlier this year in the SEC tournament, and Mary Ratliff had 2 on her own against Kelsey Dunn last season against Alabama. But that was a really big hit for Allie. We'd mentioned it before. I guess I got to eat some crow here. She'd been in a huge slump. I didn't know if she was going to get out of it. I thought she was just having a rough tournament, but she completely turned it around, got that hit. It was about 5 or 6 feet over the fence. Really just completely energized this team, and they will head into the championship series where they'll face Washington. Starts Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern time. What are you expecting out of that?
First off, I'm not so sure she's turned it around yet. Like, we'll see about that. She's still 4 for 29 in the postseason here. But I said this to you before, she doesn't really need to get another hit the rest of the postseason, or the rest of the Women's College World Series. If that's her one hit in the Women's College World Series, she did her job, as far as the team's concerned.
But she was swinging better. Like, even you said, like, you know, she's making better contact. She's not striking out and grounding into double plays anymore.
Right. Like, yeah, no, she looked much better at the plate today, more comfortable. She was hitting the ball the other way, which is what she does best, honestly. Yeah. She hit 2 pretty deep fly balls to left field earlier in the game, and then she finally hit a fly ball that was deep enough to leave the yard at a pretty important time. So, with the series coming up, you got the 2 best pitchers in softball. You got Danielle Lowry and you got Stacey Nelson. And, you would think not too many runs will be scored. You might see a 2-1 game, a 3-2 game, something like that coming up. A 1-0 game definitely wouldn't surprise me. I think both of these pitchers are going to refocus because they got hit around a little bit today, and that's not going to, you know, they don't get hit around, so.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that because both of them did get hit around. Washington played a 9-8 game that they lost against Georgia. That was the longest game ever, and then they just went out and won in a 9-3 game. So runs are, you know, they're still getting runs on Lowry, and Stacey obviously gave up 5. Moshi's given up in a game all season, so. I mean, you know, it's been a lot more about hitting than I thought it would be coming into Oklahoma City. Like, we've seen, I think, the most home runs ever in Women's College World Series history. I don't know.
Well, Stacey and Lowry both looked untouchable in their first 2 games. They pretty much shut down the other teams. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know what happened today. I don't know if they relaxed a little bit mentally because their teams were cruising. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Georgia jumped all over Lowry, scored 8 runs against her, and then Stacey, you know, had pretty much her worst game of the season, or one of her worst games of the season against Alabama today. But that one, I think, is a little bit more explainable because Alabama's seen her a bunch of times. Obviously, this was the 5th time they played her this year. They played her last year. Mm-hmm. So they've seen her a lot. They know what to expect. Georgia jumping all over Lowry surprised me a lot. And then in the second game, they came back and scored 3 more runs off of her. They lost 9-3, but still, she didn't look you know, her normal self until the second half of that game.
Yeah, and Alabama is a very good team. You know, like, they've hit well. They're always, I mean, they didn't hit her well in the first two games they played against her when Florida won 9-1 and 10-1. But in the third game of that series, they put up 6 runs. And then in the SEC championship game, they put up, I believe it was 5 runs. I mean, you know, they're a very good team. They're very well coached. And, you know, all the hitters are very, they make the adjustments and everything like that. So, I mean, it's not too surprising. It was, I mean, it was a little surprising coming at this time because this is when we thought, you know, Stacey's on another level. She's shutting down everybody. Right. Like, nothing, you know, nothing's going to get past her.
Yeah, and with Laurie, too, Georgia is a very good hitting team. They have a couple weak spots. I'd say, like, 1 through 9. They're not as balanced as, like, a Florida is or an Arizona, even though Arizona inexplicably went 2 games without scoring any runs here in Oklahoma City.
Nation's best offense,
yeah,
ladies and gentlemen.
But they have a handful of players who are very, very good hitters, and they don't really have any number one pitcher, which you saw them use a bunch of pitchers over their time here. So the only way they got here is with their offense. And so it's not, you know, they do have a good – it's not like a scrubby offensive team put up runs against her. It's somebody who could hit the ball. But that being said, it's the games have been much more entertaining this time around than they were last year just because there's a lot more home runs being hit, a lot more runs being scored. Last year there was a ton of pitchers' duels. That's pretty much all it was. I think Florida's 6-1 win against Texas A&M was like – that may have been the biggest offensive output by any one team in a game. I'd have to go back and check it, but wow. It was really like you didn't score a lot of runs here, and a lot of that was just because of the pitchers that were here last year, and you don't have that same depth.
Yeah, and the pitching is universally worse. I think we've agreed upon, you know, like we said, the top tier is Nelson and Laurie, and that got to the championship. So you can still say, you know, pitching is king or whatever, but hitting has played a much bigger role in the Women's College World Series than I personally predicted coming into this. I guess let's talk a little bit more
about it. But has it really, like, you've seen a lot of runs, but in the end, the two best pitchers are in the championship game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And that's kind of like, you saw a lot of hitting along the way, but I think just because of a lack of pitching, you know, like when we looked at Arizona State's pitcher and they trotted her out and I saw her ERA was 3, I pretty much wrote her off right from the beginning. Then they won a couple games, they won one game, and it's like, oh, maybe Arizona's okay, and then they just got shellacked by Alabama. And it's not surprising to me. If you can't pitch here, the hitter, the lineups are all really good, and you're going to get smacked around.
But I'm saying, you know, Georgia was still able to win a game against Washington,
right,
despite the fact that they, you know, they can't. They used 4 pitchers in that game, and that was
right,
part of the reason that thing took so long. Yeah. They had a conference after every third pitch.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are many reasons why that game took forever. First of all, when we say that game took forever, that game took 4.5 hours for a softball game, which is more than twice the amount of time a normal softball game will take. And it only went 8 innings. It's not like it was a 11, 12, 15-inning game. By comparison, the 25-inning baseball game yesterday went 7 hours. So they played 17 more innings in 2.5 more hours? Are you kidding me?
That was absurd.
It was, I mean, covering baseball this year was rough because you had to sit through so many games. But I think the longest game UF played was against FSU. It was a 9-inning game that went just a hair over 4 hours, like 4 hours and 5 minutes. This was 4.5 hours, and they played 1 less inning. They played 8 instead of 9.
Yeah, we were inconsolable at that point. We got there like 2 hours early. We sat there.
Georgia's a real hateable team if you're not a Georgia fan. I mean, they have like a lot of good players, and they were kind of Cinderella-y, but they're constantly celebrating when they shouldn't be. They're a little too upbeat. They're uncomfortably upbeat, I would describe them as. In particular, their shortstop, Schnacki. Yeah. And they just... they have a friggin' mound conference. I mean, there's no mound, but for lack of a better term, a mound conference. After every pitch, it seems like it's, they go in there, they crack a couple jokes, they do some high fives, and the umps really did a horrible job of keeping that game under control and keeping the game rolling. There were a lot of pitching changes, so that helped, you know, contribute to it. There were a lot of runs scored, but the biggest thing was the umps not moving the game along. They let them do whatever they wanted out there and take as much time as they needed. There was a play where the center fielder, this is a very big play in the game, is tied at 8-8. Washington had a runner on second. Somebody hits a single to center field. They send the runner home when they shouldn't have. Georgia center fielder makes a pretty good throw, nails the runner at home, and, you know, the crowd goes crazy. It's a big play. And I like, turn away for a second, say something to someone, look back on the field, and the catcher's at second base. Like, they all are around second base, but including the catcher, and they're having like a little like group hug, I don't know, after the play, but
little powwow.
What the hell is the catcher doing out at second base after get in your crouch and let's play. It was really boring after all the runs got scored, because they got scored early in the game, and it was still taking forever, and it was aggravating as a spectator, an impartial spectator of the two teams.
And then the fitting into the game, Daniel Lorry walks home the winning run after intentionally walking to load the bases, which, I mean, that was absurd.
You can't intentionally walk the bases loaded. You just can't do it when it's a tie game, because you don't leave your pitcher any wiggle room. If she walks somebody, that's it. Like, they walk in the run. It happened here. I'm a big Mets fan, as you may or may not know out there, and my Mets did it in the 1999 playoffs. They intentionally walked the bases loaded after there was a runner on third with one out, and they walked two guys. Kenny Rogers walks in the winning run, and the Mets lose in that playoffs. And it's just like, I just can't – how you can't lose on a walk-off walk like that. Like, make the other team beat you at least.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. All right, so let's get back to talking about Florida a little bit. They're currently riding a 29-game win streak into the championship series. It's a best-of-three series, so they're going to start playing Monday night. They'll play another one Tuesday night, and then, if necessary, Wednesday night. They're 3-0 in the Women's College World Series. Washington, obviously, with that loss, is 3-1. With Florida coming into this the way they are, Kyle, do you see anything that you think they need to change in the lineup especially?
I would be a little bit more patient up there for some of their big hitters. I feel like they're getting up there and taking some swings at pitches that aren't very good. Mm-hmm. And against a pitcher like Lorry, you can't help her at all. You don't want to be putting strikes on yourself. And Francesca especially, it seems like early in her at-bats, she's over-anxious she puts a lot of pressure on herself to come through and get big hits. But, I mean, she swung at some bad pitches today. She's been in a ton of 0-2 counts throughout this whole World Series. And to her credit, she seems to settle down after that 0-2, and she gets more aware of the strike zone, I guess, because she actually drew two walks today after falling into 0-2 counts.
And all really long at-bats.
Right, yeah, because she fouls off a bunch of pitches and stuff like that, but I mean, I think she just needs to go out there and understand that if she's taking a walk, she's helping her team just as much as hitting a single, pretty much. And I feel like Kelsey Bruder swung at the first pitch, I think, in all of her at-bats today, all four of her at-bats.
One resulted in a home run, and then two flyouts.
Well, she didn't hit the home run on the first pitch, but yeah, like, she popped out, I think, twice on the first pitch.
Yeah.
And I think you need to make the pitcher work a little bit harder than that. And it's kind of up and down the lineup if that's happening.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd like to see happen is I think Walton should move Tiffany DeFelice down in the lineup.
Yeah.
She's been hitting second the last couple games. She hasn't gotten a hit yet. She drew a walk today. But I wouldn't do this earlier. I'll go back on what I said. I was wrong. I'd leave Christina Hilberth in the two hole, or in this case, move her back into the two hole. She's swinging the bat well. She's running well. She seems to be hot right now. She's getting on base. I'd move her up there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'd probably move Christina up there. If I wouldn't move Kim up there, which is still on the table for me. She went 0-3 today, but she's still she's swinging the bat well. I think she can still do stuff, and it helps to have a leader up there and everything. But yeah, like you said, Christina is swinging the bat right now. Like, the play that really stood out from one of the at-bats she had was when she got a hit, and it was a little chopper right over third baseman Kelly Montalvo, who's about 4'10", you know, being generous. Like, that to me is such a smart play from somebody, and that's what Christina's done pretty much all year, is just be like a smart hitter. And against Lorry, I mean, you need everything you can get, especially in the top of the lineup. If you can get Age on base, Christina on base, then let Franny, Kelsey, or Megan just hit any of them in.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he – I expect him to honestly make that move. I think he's done a pretty – he's shown that he's willing to react to what the lineup, demands, and I think he'll go ahead and make that move. With Allie hitting the grand slam, though, I don't think he'll move her back up in the lineup. I think he'll keep her at sixth, which is smart. I think that would be the best thing to do, is leave her where she is.
Yeah.
You know, Franny's hit pretty well or drawn walks in the World Series. Kelsey's hit well. She had a home run this game. She had a double last game. Megan's obviously hit well in the World Series. So I don't see any reason why you should slide her up in front of those hitters.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's something else I want to talk about, the lineup. Once again, thanks to the Grand Slam and Kelsey Bruder's home runs, they've still scored all of their runs off of home runs, which is ridiculous. I'd like to see if this has ever happened before, because I really can't imagine something like this. I mean, just And it's funny because we've talked about during the year, you know, like, oh, you know, they're a great home run hitting team and everything. But, you know, they've sort of prided themselves on being able to do it all. I mean, Walton has the players obviously love being able to hit the home runs and have the home run swings that they prided themselves on. But, like, is this team going to be able to do this against Lurie? Can they count on that?
Yeah, I think they will be able to. I mean, you just need – Lurie's given up a couple home runs now. You just need to, you know, put one good swing on one good pitch pretty much. I think they'll hit a couple more before this whole thing's over. I wouldn't be surprised. If not, they'll shoot the gaps at a couple doubles. I mean, they'll hit for power. It may not be home runs, but they're going to hit the ball into the, you know, into the gaps, and they're going to hit it deep. They're not just, like, a slap-hitting singles team. That's just not who they are.
Yeah.
Christina's the only player on the team that slap hits, and, you know, the rest of them all, you know, have a decent amount of power. Mm-hmm. So at least they'll hit for extra bases, and they'll stand in there, and they'll take their cuts against their...
But they won't hit triples, as we learned tonight from Alabama coach Patrick Murphy, who in an inspired rant after the game talked about how the fence here at ASA, a Hall of Fame stadium, needs to be pushed back a little bit from the 190 to 10, 190 distances.
It's 220 the center.
220 the center. But either way, like, most of the home runs have come either, you know, they've been well-hit balls that be home runs everywhere else, or they've been just over that 190, you know, the 190s and left and right. But you agreed with his statement here,
well,
right?
Well, it's hard to say that it wasn't a little bit of sour grapes because his team just got beat off of a grand slam and also another two-run home run earlier in the game. But I agree. There were a couple points that he made that I think everyone would agree with, and those three are the corner should be 200.
Yeah.
No one can explain to me why they're 190 and they moved in where seemingly every other field in the nation is 200 down the corners, so they need to be 200. He wants a warning track in the outfield, which I totally agree with also.
Absolutely.
A warning track's completely necessary. You need to be able to know where the wall's at. They need to put a warning track in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing is something that I said earlier, is why can't they get them a real fence out there in the outfield? I understand that the field's meant to, I think, be expanded for slow pitch.
Yeah.
But you got to give them – this is such a big event. There's no reason for them to be leading back and falling over four-foot fencing that gives out in the outfield. Put up a real friggin' fence for this event, the real six-foot, seven-foot fence, whatever you're going to put out there, and let them play, like, you know, real softball.
Yeah, it's like a four-foot chain-link fence out there. It's like playing in somebody's backyard at some point.
It's a joke. Like, to the point where you could manipulate the fence to get a couple more feet reaching backwards, you know? I think you could lean against it and push it back rather than jumping and going up over it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think those three points, I don't think anyone can argue with, and I think those need to be changed. The way he was talking, I think he actually wanted them to move the fences back further, like possibly make the dimensions 210, 230, 210, something like that, where it's a bigger field because the teams are better. But I don't agree with that at all. The home runs that are being hit is just a result of pitching not being as good, and it'll balance itself out again.
Yeah, like what we're seeing here in the World Series is not anything different than you see all year. You know, like, good teams hit home runs and everything, and him, you know, even implying that it should be made different than the normal fields. Granted, I don't agree with the fact that it's smaller than a normal field right now. I think that's absurd that you change anything going into, you know, the championship series. It'd be like, in, you know, in the NCAA tournament, they're like, now we're going to play on 8-foot hoops. Like, just don't do that going into it. And I don't agree with changing it at all. I agree with making it normal, regulation, what everything else is. And that, to me, would be perfectly fair.
Well, the thing about baseball, I know softball's not baseball, but it's the same type of game in that the fence doesn't need to be uniform from field to field. It, like, in baseball, you see a lot of weird dimensions in different fields, and, like, that's kind of what gives the field character, and it doesn't affect the game. It's just that's how it is. You're going to hit more. Some parks are hitter-friendly. Some parks are pitcher-friendly. But at the World Series, you know, they can have some different dimensions if they want. They could push center field back a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, moving it in for them just seems weird and not okay. It seems like 200 would be the bare minimum, you know, that you could do it.
Yeah, I'd say 200, 220, 200 is, like, you know, that'd be pretty standard. That'd be kind of what you expect there.
Right.
Anything else we got to talk about with softball here?
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about Allie Gardner and the home run. Just because it was such a big hit. And, you know, she was 0-for-9 in the World Series, 3-for-28 coming into the game in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
and her average actually dipped under 300. And this is somebody who hit 400 for the team last year, a couple shades over 400 for them. And and the post game, you know, after when the media was asking her about it, she was very emotional, you know, from a happy standpoint, obviously. Mm. But you could just tell it's been weighing on her how bad she's been struggling. Mm. And, you know, she just said it was nice to finally be able to pick up her team since they've been picking her up all season. And I just, you know, you felt like that hit really just meant a lot to her and to the team. And it was huge. So I can't say enough about, like, the atmosphere and how cool that was to watch in person.
Yeah.
And she didn't hit the ball particularly well. She didn't exactly square it up. And it kind of was a towering shot that just kept carrying to the opposite field. But that's when, you know, when you have real power, that's what you can do. If you can hit the ball to the opposite field and have it carry like that, you're doing something right as a hitter. But she, you know, she didn't think it was out when she hit it. I think few people in the stadium thought it was out. It just kind of kept carrying. The wind was blowing out a little bit to left, which probably helped.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kelsey Dunn was pretty upset in the post game, understandably so, because Florida has really, really gotten to her.
Yeah.
So good run for Alabama. And the other thing I guess we would want to talk about is how well the SEC is doing.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Georgia, we saw there was three of the last four were SEC teams. Right. You know, Alabama had, you know, only two of them could possibly advance. And, you know, Georgia, you know, put up a decent fight against Washington. Obviously couldn't hold up to Laurie, and then Alabama and Florida. I mean, it's the best year for the conference. It's like, you know, they said before the World Series, like, this conference is threatening the Pac-10 at this point, right. I think. For a dominance now, obviously not historically. It'll take forever for that.
And Alabama coach Patrick Murphy also said that he thinks this is the SEC's year, and he thinks Florida's definitely going to win. He said that Florida will win without a doubt.
Yeah.
I don't really have any reason to disagree with him. I also, you know, I've kind of said all year I thought Alabama was the second best team in the nation and Florida just disposed of them. So yeah. I don't know if I still feel that way, but I think they're up there. They're sure, if they're not the second best team, they're the third best team for sure.
I think in the same sense, you know, being a little more familiar with Alabama helped Florida. Like, you know, Alabama being so familiar with Florida helped them a little bit. Like, I think if the two hadn't met before, Alabama would have struggled much more against Stacey Nelson especially. So it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, if that's different going into the championship series.
And you know, the feeling after the game, and this is the feeling from both sides, it wasn't just Alabama saying this, was that Alabama outplayed Florida, and Florida kind of got lucky with a couple big hits. But I'm not so sure I actually agree with that, because if you think of how Alabama created their runs, it was a lot of just like, the hit happened to fall into the right spot, and a lot of things kind of went their way.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the hits that scored two runs was this bloop job to left field, pretty much off the fist of one of their hitters. I can't remember who. And Megan Bush, who, God bless her, she's a great hitter, but she's not the best shortstop, and she doesn't have the best range. And she just didn't get back on the ball, in my opinion, which hung up there forever. And Francesca tried to make a diving catch coming in from left field and just couldn't come up with it. But I felt like that was a really catchable ball, and that's just a lucky – it's not like she hit the ball well, and they scored two runs on that play.
Yeah.
And the first run that they scored, there were two outs and a runner on third. Kelly Montalvo, you know, corkscrews one up the middle that just falls – again, not well hit, but right up the middle. Didn't even – if no one would have touched the ball, it would not have left the infield. That's how – softly hit it was, but she put it past the pitcher, and you know, it was fast enough where she couldn't beat, you know, she was going to beat out the throw, and that scored a run. So if you look at how they scored some of their runs, it wasn't like they were hitting doubles off Stacy and taking her deep. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like they were pitching great. You know, Kelsey Dunn gave up a home run right away, and then she got into trouble at various points in the game. So I think Alabama definitely played well enough to win. But I didn't feel like the discrepancy was so huge where it was like Florida just got lucky, Alabama started making errors, and that's how they lost the game.
I'll agree that, you know, the discrepancy wasn't as big as maybe, you know, Murphy and Walton even were saying that it was. But, I mean, Florida did a couple things where they sort of beat themselves. You know, they had two errors in the game. Just, you know, couldn't get anything going. They left a bunch of runners on base and everything. Defense was a little bit shaky at times. But hitting-wise, I mean, you know, they did what they had.
I don't remember what the second error was. I remember Francesca made a pretty inconsequential one where someone hit a single to left, and she bobbled it a little bit, and the runner scooted into second. But I don't remember what the other error was.
A run scored on that eventually.
Well, yeah, I mean, she got moved over to third, and then she came in off the single. But, yeah. I mean, well, I don't remember what the other
error. The other one was Lynette Franklin made a diving play for the ball, stopped it, and then, like, a great stop, like, you know, flying through the air like that Monfils guy that we saw on the tennis highlights the other night, and stopped it and everything, and then just completely botched the throw to first. That was in, I believe, the sixth inning.
Yeah, so a run didn't score on that play.
A run did not score on that one.
I didn't think they made huge errors. I didn't think Florida played bad at all. It's unfair to say, like, they hit home runs and that's lucky. Like, no, they have good hitters that hit home runs. I mean, home runs are the best way to create a run. If you hit a home run, you created a run. So I don't think Alabama outplayed them that much. I really don't.
I'm not saying, like, you know, they got lucky and hit those home runs. You know, that's what this team has done all year. Like, that's the skill. Like, that's their greatest skill is hitting home runs for this team. I'm just saying, you know, you look, and Alabama did out-hit them. They, you know, they did outplay them for six innings of the game. They scored. They had them 5-2. How can you, like, why do you think it's, you know, that Alabama outplayed them so, or that Florida outplayed them?
I didn't say Florida outplayed them so much. I just said that it was, like, I think both teams played well enough to win, and it was just whoever got the last hit in the last inning. Alabama, I don't feel like played any better than Florida did. I really don't. Like, I don't feel like Kelsey Dunn was more dominant than Stacey. Yeah. Florida just left more runners on base, honestly. Like, Kim left two runners on in back-to-back innings with two outs where, you know, she didn't hit the ball well. Yeah. But she didn't hit the ball any worse than the girl for Alabama who blooped one into left field off the fist that just happened to fall. I just didn't see a huge discrepancy in the level of play.
I'll agree with that in the sense that, you know, like you said, the team with the last at bat won that game. And I think Murphy said that even after the game. But I think defensively, there are some things, like you said, Megan Bush's range. She's not very well positioned at times. A lot of balls, I mean, you know, it would have been hard to stop him in that situation. But, you know, great defensive teams, or, you know, the best defensive teams, I guess, could have stopped something.
Yeah, I think Alabama played better on defense than Florida. That's for sure. I would agree with that. I don't think you can really disagree with that. But as far as pitching wise, I know Stacey had a little rough go of it, but I don't feel like she threw that much worse than Kelsey Dunn. It was just a matter of she had one bad inning. Mm. And as far as hitting goes, I don't feel like they hit any worse than Alabama did. So I guess defensively they could have done a little bit more, and Alabama made a couple nice plays on defense. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't that – I didn't feel like there was a huge gap where it was just like a Florida lucked into it type thing, or Alabama beat themselves. Ultimately, Florida went out there and took it from them in the last inning. It wasn't like Kelsey Dunn, you know, just completely melted down, started throwing wild pitches, hitting batters, and then the defense made a bunch of errors, and then that was it. Like, Florida took it from them. They got a couple hits. They got on base, and then they hit a home run, so –
I think we agree. I just, you know, I feel bad saying, like, oh, Florida, you know, outplayed them for the entire game, when, you know, going into that last inning, you know, that ball, you know, 6 feet shorter, they don't win that game.
No, I think both teams played well, and either team could have won that game depending on a couple pitches here and there, a couple breaks here and there. That's how I feel about it. But I just felt like both teams in the press conference were quick to say, Alabama, if we were Florida, Alabama outplayed us the whole game, or if we were Alabama, we outplayed Florida the whole game, we should have won. I didn't feel like that was the case. It wasn't like the ump was jobbing Alabama or anything like that. So
in that sense, it's like Alabama just trying to, like, console themselves, you know, talk themselves into the fact that they were one pitch away from winning, you know, from winning that in Florida, you know, trying to be the humble victors, I guess you could say.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think it was much closer to that scenario than the actual truth of it. So I feel like we got in a lengthy talk about that, but one thing that, you know, I want to talk about coming to that, I think Florida is not a good defensive team on the whole.
Yeah.
And I think Walton overrates them. Like, when you hear them talk about their defense, they talk about, like, they're a great defensive team. Like when Stacey talks about, oh, my defense is so good, or like Francesca, like, oh, our defense is great, or Tim Walton, like, oh, our defense is always going to play well. I don't really see that as being true. Christina Hilberth is a super plus defensive catcher. Mm-hmm. Today, Walton said she's one of the best defensive catchers in the nation. I don't disagree. She's amazing defensively. But as you look around at the positions after that, I don't know if I could pick out another, like, definitely plus defender out of everyone.
Kim's pretty good in center.
I'd say Kim is real good in center. She covers a lot of ground. I've only ever seen her make one mistake.
And it was last year
in the College World Series. But, yeah, I'd say she's a plus center fielder. I think Megan Bush is definitely a below average shortstop to the point where I would move her to first base next year. I know you don't agree with me there, but I wouldn't
say I disagree. I just think
Kelsey's or move her to second base. I'd try to move her to second base, maybe move Asia to shortstop if she can play there, because she's a great hitter. You want her bat in the lineup, but I don't feel like she's a good shortstop. Corey Brooks is, I think she's good at third base. I think she, you know, average to slightly above average
at third base.
Allie Gardner at first. I mean, first base, you're not playing too much defense anyway. Yeah. She doesn't do anything wrong.
No.
She's fine. She's a wash there.
Yeah.
Asia's pretty good at second. Maybe not incredible.
Not going to dive and grab everything, but she's going to make the play she should, I'd say.
And then Kelsey and Franny are both good in the outfield, but again,
it's not even their natural position out there, though, you could say.
Yeah, I mean, they both do a good job. I don't think any of the outfielders have a plus arm, really, as far as throwing runners out. I could be wrong about that. But, you know, to the point where Walton puts Brooke Johnson in late in games if he feels like he can, because she's a really good defensive outfielder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not saying that they're not a horrible defensive team to the point where it hurts them. But I'd say they're, you know, maybe they're, if we're going on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe they're a 6 or a 6.5 or a 7 defensively, which is good. That's better than average.
Yeah.
That'll win. But their offense is a 10 and their pitching is a 10.
Yeah.
So when your offense is a 10, your pitching is a 10, your defense only has to be a 6.5 or a 7 to go all the way.
Yeah.
So, but it's just funny when you hear them talk about it. It's like, we have this incredible defensive team that makes every play. I just don't see that as the case.
Yeah, and I mean, they'll say even certain players that we've called out, you know, that we just called out there, you know, say, oh, great defensive player, you know, just, you know, one of the top defenders, you know, should be on the All-SEC defensive teams. Like, not really. Like, you know, you guys, you make errors, and a lot of the errors that you do make aren't called errors because you got some favorable scorekeeping. So, as we talked about before.
And again, I don't want to get too down on them defensively. They're not a bad defensive team. They're just, like I said, on a scale of 1 to 10, they're not an 8, 9, or a 10.
No.
They're somewhere, they're a little bit better than average, but they're not a team. Georgia is a 9 defensively or a 10 defensively. Like,
mm-hmm.
they cover ground at every position. They don't make any errors. Their fielding percentage, I think, led the nation. That's a great defensive team. That's a team who can say, hey, we play great defense. We, like, our defense is going to keep us in games. They can say stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe their pitching's a 6, though.
Yeah. And
their offense is a 10, you know? So it's, you know, you got to be good in different facets of the game, and Florida's plus in all facets of the game, but to say they're some great defensive team, if you watch them play, you just see that's not really the case.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where they like to give credit to, you know, to something that everybody else isn't giving credit to, I think, because it's not like Walton's going to walk in like, we have the greatest hitters in the country if you don't ask him.
Right.
You know, when you ask him about it, he's going to say, we have 11 of the toughest outs in the country, which might be true.
Right. No, their lineup's incredible. 1 through 9, it's really, there's no easy outs in that entire lineup. And defensively, again, I want to say Christina's great. She's amazing defensively. People don't run on her anymore.
Mm-mm.
Brittany Rogers stole a couple bases today, but she's going to steal a couple bases off of anyone. She's just too fast.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you do against her. She's just one of those kinds of runners. So, but nobody else steals on her. She makes incredible plays on a near every game basis.
Yeah.
She
blocks
and catching is one of the, you know, if you want to be strong up the middle on defense, you want to have a good defensive catcher, shortstop, and center fielder if you can help it. They got 2 of the 3 as far as I'm concerned. And that's good. You know, that's pretty good if you can get 2 of those 3 positions held down by, you know, really strong defensive players.
Yeah, I agree to that. What do you think of Alabama as a defensive team?
I think they're good defensively. I mean, Montalvo's real good at third base. Eubanks is pretty good at short. But Brittany Rogers just covers the whole field in center field. She made a great diving catch today, and she just really – she covers the whole field. She's super fast, and she gives them a lot of, you know, a lot of advantage in the outfield.
Yeah, it's funny. We noticed when Allie hit that home run, you see this blur coming in from center field, and it's Brittany Rogers trying to, you know, somehow make a play on that. I think that's what it said a lot about Alabama in that last play. All right, so I think we've just about out-talked softball here. Are we ready to move on to some other stuff?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, let's move on and talk about the UF baseball team. As the number 8 national seed in the NCAA tournament, the Gators swept the Gainesville Regional with 2 wins over Miami and a win over Bethune-Cookman. The most recent win over Miami was a 16-5 blowout that sent them into the Super Regional, also in Gainesville, where they will play either Georgia Tech or Southern Miss. The winner of that will be determined Monday night. Kyle, you cover the team. What do you got to think about this?
Well, this is big for Gator fans because Miami is the Gators' daddy when it comes to baseball. It's like a Yankees Red Sox situation before the Red Sox, you know, exercised the demons. Miami just has the Gators' numbers. They never ever beat Miami. The stat was like, I think they were 0-10 in a regional when Miami was in the field. So, wow. Like, some of those losses came to Miami. Some of them were just them cowering from Miami.
They didn't want to play Miami.
Yeah. But, like, they just can't get it done against Miami historically. And even earlier this year, they got straight embarrassed at home in a three-game set. It was one of those games was, like, 15-1 or 15-2. Like, it was brutal.
Outscored them 26-8.
It was horrible early in the year. And, you know, kudos to them. They completely turned it around. Mm. And they spanked Miami twice. They beat them 8-2, I believe, the first game.
I think so, yeah.
And then 16-5 now. That's convincing. They didn't squeak out a couple wins against Miami. They, they beat them down in regional play. So, and they beat one of their best pitchers the other day, Chris Hernandez,
yeah.
I believe his name is.
Yeah, it's the ace.
Yeah, who really pitched well against them the first time out. So, you know, great job to the hitters on this team. And, they really did a good job this weekend.
Yeah, Preston Tucker, the freshman who you guys have been high on since you guys first saw him at batting practice, you and
right.
Bobby, that is.
Right.
He broke the UF all-time RBI record as a freshman, which is unbelievable. Right. Go ahead, talk about Preston
Tucker. All right, yeah, this is the Preston Tucker segment of the show. Everybody get ready for about 2 or 3 minutes of love.
I think they're always ready for 2 or 3 minutes of love when you listen to the Alligator Sports Podcast.
When Bobby and I first saw Preston Tucker hit in batting practice, it was love at first sight. The kid was just incredible as a player. Not a great interview. He's a nice, nice kid, but he's still, he's a freshman, so he's very intimidated. He gives the company line a lot. But the kid can rake, and in his freshman year so far, his stats, he's hit .357. His OBP isn't great. It's .408, but it's not bad. His slugging percentage is .617, and he's hit 14 home runs with 83 RBIs in his freshman season.
Unreal.
I mean, this kid's only going to go up from here. His freshman numbers are, Bobby kept dropping a line in the preseason that I always cringed whenever he said it, but one of the older players on the team, I don't remember if it was Barnes or Dendecker, one of the older players had said that Tucker's power, reminded them of Matt LaPorta's power. And Bobby kept saying that, like, directly drawing the comparisons to LaPorta, and I kept cringing, like, Bob, don't, please, like, don't go there. We don't want to go there yet. His freshman year has been just as good as LaPorta's freshman year and better in some respects. I don't remember exactly how many home runs LaPorta hit. I believe it was 16, though. Preston Tucker's in range. It's very close to the home run numbers, but he has more RBIs than LaPorta has ever had in a single season, which is, a little bit of a tribute to the lineup around him as well. But his batting average is .357, and LaPorta didn't hit for average until later in his career.
Yeah.
I believe he hit just a little bit under .300 his freshman year.
Okay.
So he's way ahead of him in that regard. Where Tucker can improve is a little bit in the plate discipline department. He can take a few more pitches, but I would argue that he makes contact on so many balls. He's only struck out 22 times this season. To put that into perspective, Avery Barnes struck out 41 times this year, and he's a good contact hitter.
Wow.
Josh Adams had the most strikeouts on the team. That was 53. A guy like Matt Dendecker, who could be a top 3-round pick in the MLB draft, struck out 48 times. So those are like the guys you should be comparing him to because they played all the time with him, and he struck out less than half as much as some of these guys. He doesn't strike out at all.
Wow.
So I think what happens is he's not as selective enough in getting his pitch sometimes because the kid can hit anything. Like, he will go a little bit out of the zone, and he puts balls in play and hits them hard that other people don't. Other people swing and miss on, or they foul him back. Preston Tucker puts it in play, so that's why maybe his on-base percentage isn't so high. That's why he doesn't draw as many walks, because he doesn't go as deep in the count, because when he swings, it's going into play with him.
Mm. All right, that's interesting. And where do we see them going in the Super Regional? Because none of us, when we did our baseball preview podcast, a couple months back, none of us saw them going past the regional at best. Only Bobby Colovi, the other baseball beat writer, said they would make it to a Super Regional, and they go, Bobby, you were correct. You were the only one of us who was correct. But where do we see them going from here? Can they make it to Omaha?
Let me take a time out. I want to say congratulations to Bob, because when he said that, I think we all thought he was a little bit crazy for going out and saying that they would make the Super Regional, but he was proven correct.
We all snickered,
yeah. I said they'd be competitive in their regional, but Bob, really, he hit it on the head, so he wins. Good job, Bobby. As far as what to expect from them, they either play Georgia Tech or UMass.
Southern Miss.
Southern Miss, my bad. I got lost there for a second. And Southern Miss, who will play tomorrow or Monday, which is today, I guess, if you're listening to this. But I know nothing about either of those teams. I'm going to be completely honest. They both have pretty impressive records. Georgia Tech historically is a really good baseball program. They've produced names like Nomar Garciaparra, Jason Veritek, and Jesus Christ himself, Matt Wieters, who just got called up by the Baltimore Orioles. I'm sure there's a laundry list of other major league players that they've produced, so they should be a tough matchup. Southern Miss, I don't know nearly as much about. Don't ask me. So, but you know, we saw in the first game of the regional against Bethune-Cookman what this team is capable of in a bad way. They have a lot of potential. They score a lot of runs, and they can be very good when they get a solid pitching and defensive performance from their team, but they don't always get that.
Yeah.
And they're capable of losing to anyone. I really believe that on any given day, just because their pitching and their defense isn't consistent.
Yeah, we talked about that. Like, they could lose to the worst team and then turn around and beat the best team.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm going to say this series, the Super Regional series, is going to go to three games no matter what. They're going to drop an embarrassing game, and they're going to come back, and they're going to win really impressively. And then it's that third game, whether or not they can string together another impressive performance,
right,
that's going to determine how they come out.
Yeah, somebody said who I was talking to, I don't remember who it was, so I'm sorry, whoever's line I'm taking. I don't think it was an Alligator guy, but they said, you know, that this team can't win when they don't play their best game. When they play an off game, really great teams have a way of like, all right, we didn't play our best today, but we still won. When the Gators don't play their best, they don't win. Like when the pitching and the defense doesn't show up, which is, you know, one out of every three or four games, it's not going to be good for them. They're going to lose to teams. But when their pitching and defense does show up, they're really tough because that lineup is very solid.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to just talk about Jonathan Pigott for a second too, because he's a guy who's really come on and been like a postseason hero for this team. I mean, he couldn't beat out Riley Cooper early in the year for the right field job. Once Riley Cooper started sucking, he got beat out by Daniel Pigott, which is Jonathan Pigott's younger brother, who's a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
So Jonathan Pigott could not beat out his younger brother either. Once Jonathan Pigott started seeing a little bit of time late in the year, but Daniel Pigott was still the guy, then Daniel Pigott got hurt, and Jonathan Pigott got plugged into that lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid's just been on fire in the postseason. He's got 6 home runs now. He's hit 4 in the postseason, or maybe 5. I don't know. But it's been unbelievable what he's been able to do and really spark the offense for this team. He's been great. Especially Dendecker struggled a little bit down the stretch, so he gave him a lift. Dendecker had a good game against Miami today, so hopefully he'll come out of his funk. But their lineup's just great, so if they can get any pitching and defense, they could go to Omaha. It's not out of the question for them to go to Omaha.
I mean, you got
to
figure that the favorites coming into this, right, is the national seed. No matter what, they're the favorites to go to Omaha, right?
Like I said, I don't know much about either of the other two teams, so I don't want to say either way there. But yeah, I mean, as far as the committee sees it, yeah, they're the better team. Obviously, they got seeded higher. So, I mean, Gainesville gets a super regional here. It's the first time they've been in a super regional since 2005.
Yep.
Third time in the last 6 years. So, I mean, Florida's a good baseball program historically. They're not great, I would say, but they're good. They compete. They go to the College World Series every once in a while. They do some, you know, they're a name. They're on the map. So, yeah, they could go back this year, and I don't think they have enough pitching to win it, but they could definitely go and compete and win a couple games, maybe.
With the young talent on this team, we mentioned Tucker and some of the pitchers. Do we think this is sort of starting the development, or maybe the redevelopment of a Florida baseball, you know, powerhouse?
Absolutely. They're in great position going forward. It's a lot like the softball team from last year. They're not as good, but as far as what they're losing, it's not a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah.
They lose Avery Barnes, which is rough. Avery Barnes is a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
And they lose Teddy Foster, who's hit well in a substitute role.
Sure.
Not really substitute, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like,
yeah.
He fills in. He doesn't play every day. He's
going
to hit. He catches Locke all the time when Locke pitches. And he hits every, you know, fifth game or so, or fourth game. He hit a little bit more down the stretch because he played well. But they lose Teddy Foster. They lose Stephen Locke, who's been their most dependable starter, you know, throughout since he came back to rejoin the team. So that's going to hurt them a little bit. And then they're probably going to lose Dendecker to the draft, if I had to guess.
Okay.
That's not a for sure because Dendecker's only a junior, but I anticipate him being drafted pretty high and probably bolting for the majors. After that, they don't lose anything else.
Brandon MacArthur, correct?
Oh, Brandon MacArthur, who's a huge leader role,
yeah,
but his production can be replaced. And he's had a good year. He's hit 337, two home runs, 37 RBIs, 13 doubles, is tied for the team lead. His OBP is right at 400. He's a good player. It's not Brandon MacArthur's not only out there to wave the flag and rally the troops, but he's not completely. It's not like losing one of their top three or four hitters, I'd say.
All right, so yeah, definitely look for that going into next year, especially if they don't, you know, pull off the trip to Omaha this year. This is right. Still a bright spot. This is a, you know, this is a positive season.
Yeah, absolutely. I expect them to be better next year. Their pitchers have to develop. I mean, yeah. I really do believe that they lose Keating. I can't believe we forgot to say Keating. I mean, he's been, you know, not himself for a lot of this season, and it's really unfortunate. A guy who may not get to play at the next level, he didn't get to go out with, you know, the way he'd probably want to end his career. But he's been pitching better as of late, and that could be a big plus for them if he can, you know, give them a good outing or two, in the remainder of the season. But they'll lose him, but their arms, you know, Morande is going to be better next year. He really hit some rough patches this year that I didn't see coming because he's so talented. Pantoliotis, he's been good. He, again, he's had a couple rough outings here and there, but he's been pretty consistent for them. He's only going to get better. DeSclafani has really shown flashes of greatness. Like, Bill Simmons talks about this, and a lot of people talk about this. If it's okay that you need time to develop if you're going to be a great player. You're not going to be a great player right off the bat when you make the switch to the next level. But you got to show them something at some point. At some point, you have to have a flash of, oh, this is what he could be. Mm-hmm. And DeSclafani's had those moments this year where he struck out a ton of batters, been pretty untouchable, and pitched well in some big games. So I think he could really emerge as a great pitcher for them down the road.
Maybe look at that, what's his name, Schuster, the kid who had all the no-hitters?
Yeah, if Schuster comes to school, then, you know, he'll probably be great here. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But if he gets drafted and goes, that's going to be that. They signed a huge class of recruits. I don't know anything about any of them except for Schuster, really. But when they come in, you know, who knows who's going to be good in that class. I've heard a lot of rumblings that Schuster's not even the best pitcher in the recruiting class.
Ooh.
From some people with, you know, close to the team and some other reporters. I don't believe that. How can you be better than Schuster as a high school pitcher, really? I mean, I'm sure there are a few guys that are better prospects than that on the next level, but not many. I mean, Schuster's been so impressive. I don't really believe that necessarily. But at least they have a lot of other talent coming in. It's not like he's the only guy in the class.
Yeah, the fact that conversation is even, you know, out there
is good.
It's a positive sign
exactly.
For Florida.
And right. Kevin O'Sullivan's the man. Like, really, I can't say enough about him as a coach. He does everything you want from your coach. He protects his players in the media. He doesn't go after any of his players, which I respect a lot.
Yeah.
When a guy's struggling, you know how he handles that? He talks to him, and he reduces their role on the field. He doesn't call him out. He doesn't criticize him. He doesn't say negative things. He doesn't embarrass anyone. He'll stick up for his players. So you're going to like playing for him because he's up front with you and he's going to protect you as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, he makes the switches that need to be made. He's not overly loyal to guys. If he needs you to go from starting to the bullpen, he's going to do that. If he needs you to go from bullpen to starting, he's going to do that. If he has to move you down in the lineup, he's going to do that. He moved Dendecker down to seventh in the lineup. And, you know, it's moves that have to be made, and he's not afraid to do it. He'll shuffle his team. He gives different looks. He makes adjustments, and he's, you know, I can't say enough about him. I think he's a great coach, and I think he can take this program to a championship eventually.
Absolutely, and I mean, he's already showed signs of progress here in his third year, I believe it is, correct?
Yeah, third year. And
he's starting to win postseason games, so I mean, you can't ask for much more.
Wait, third year? No, this is his second year.
Yeah.
This is only his second year here. So, yeah, only his second year here. He's done a great job with the team. And, you know, we say a lot about the UF coaches when they don't do things well, and we like to, you know, talk trash about some of them when stuff goes bad. But O'Sullivan's really just doing a great job, and I think he should get a little bit more attention than he does, especially, and the kind of person he is, how he is with the media. He's great. He's really accommodating. He's really humble. He's not all of that. You know, it's all about his players. It's not about him ever. He's not the genius behind everything that's going on. It's even though he deserves a lot of the credit, but he'll never take it.
Yes, yeah.
And I respect that immensely.
All right. I think that about wraps it up for the baseball talk. Let's move on here. We're going to do our weekly awards. We'll start off with the Gator Guarantees. We're going to predict one thing that happens in the next week of Florida sports. I guess I'll start out here. I'm going to say that the softball team will sweep Washington, win two games. Going to win one Monday night's game, then Tuesday night's game, and we will be on our way back to Gainesville by Wednesday. Kyle, go ahead.
Well, I hope you're right, because I previously, in a Gator Guarantee, predicted that they would win out the entire postseason and win the championship. So I'm two games away now. Alan Nip. Gardner, thanks for keeping that Gator Guarantee alive.
Oh, nice.
And I'm going to say that the baseball team makes it to the College World Series. They make it to Omaha for this reason alone. Once we get back to Gainesville, I will have spent a good almost 60 hours in the car between the Hoover trip to SEC tournament and this trip. And that's in like a two-week span maybe.
Yeah.
So McCall's already on me about going to Omaha if they make it that far. And I'm going to be put to a decision if I want to get in the car and do another 40 hours combined each, you know, with there and back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a tough decision to make. I don't know if I can handle it. It might kill me physically, but we'll see. That's my main reason for predicting that, because life is going to be tough for me. And that's just the way God plays it. And one thing we need to say about our guarantees from last week, Adam, you wrongfully predicted that the Gators would not make it to Super Regionals.
I did.
Defend yourself.
I can't.
All right.
And, I mean, I honestly thought Miami was going to get the best of them because of what they did earlier in the year.
Right.
Clearly, it's a different team. One of the two teams is different. I'm going to guess Florida has improved that much. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, yeah, I really can't defend it other than that.
Well, in no way did I think you made an off-the-wall prediction by saying that, though. I predicted that they would advance to Super Regionals,
mm-hmm.
and Phil predicted that they would sweep Regionals and advance to Super Regionals. He was correct. I mean, we were both correct. He kind of one-upped me.
Phil was the corrector.
He was the correctest. He has an expertise in being correct. But
let's not let this go to his head, shall we?
Yeah, Phil's never right about anything, so he really lucked into this. But yeah, Phil, I guess, you know, score his first point ever in being right, so...
All right, let's move on. We're going to give out our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and our Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. I guess I will once again start with that. I'm going to start off with my Reggie Nelson Award. Absolutely has to go to Allie Gardner for hitting that grand slam, breaking out of the slump and everything. Just keeping the team alive, keeping Kyle's Gator Guarantee from a couple weeks alive, keeping us away from having to write another deadline story for a game that would have started at maybe 11:30 p.m. Eastern time. I don't even know when. The whole scheduling thing, which Kyle's going to talk about later, is such a disaster that that game would have started at 11:30, despite the fact that it was scheduled to start at 9 p.m. So, you know, for personal reasons, I would like to give Allie my Reggie, but also for, you know, what she's done and what she was able to do. Because she's, like we said, she's somebody that you like to see succeed. She does everything the right way. You know, she's loved the game. She's played the game since she was little. So absolutely, my Reggie Nelson Award is going to go to Allie Gardner. And my Kyle Jackson Bad Angle of the Week is going to our favorite Quality Inn here in Bricktown, Oklahoma City, for a number of reasons.
Careful about the Bricktown. Like, they say it's Bricktown.
No. Like we said, it's quote-unquote Bricktown. It's through the industrial ghetto, and then you come to our hotel here on the corner, full of homeless people begging for our money with their plethora of cardboard boxes and black Sharpie marks.
Right. I mean, to be fair, if we stayed actually in Bricktown, it'd cost us twice as much money. So this is really what we wanted. It's just outside of Bricktown for half the price.
Yeah.
But go ahead and tell
me. I mean,
people,
we don't have the money to stay in Bricktown, let's be honest here.
Absolutely.
But it's clear, you know, you get what you pay for, all right? So first of all, when we get here, we walk through, we see, you know, our room is, it's by the pool. You know, it's summer, it's 90 degrees here in Oklahoma City. I'm thinking, you know, maybe every once in a while I want to go to the pool. I look over there, it's empty. You just see the ground. You see concrete. It's rough. And then I'm going back there tonight. I'm on my way back from the ice machine. And I look in the pool a little closer. It's lit for some reason. And I see a table and chairs. Like, you know, people have been congregating inside the pool to do, you know, whatever Lord knows people do here at the Quality Inn here in Bricktown. And, you know, like, that's shoddy enough. But then this one really grinded my gears. And I made a point talking about this to Kyle when I came back in the room after this excursion. I wanted to go use our hotel's exercise center, our fitness room, whatever they're calling it here. Place where they have broken treadmill, bike, creepy Stairmaster, and the worst little exercise console I've ever seen in my entire life. So I go there, it's about 5 p.m., it's closed, inexplicably. The hours above it say 10 to 10, it's closed at 5. So I go into the office, you know, I'm one of two people there. Somebody's currently being served by the only person around the desk. I say, hey, can I get the key in there? Lady says she can only unlock it herself. So I'm like, all right, I'll wait till this person's done. So right as she's finishing up with that person, Hell's Angels walk in. Not literally Hell's Angels, but they might as well have been. Just, you know, motorcycle bound, you know, everybody. So she goes over, you know, all the procedures with them, leaving me, you know, on my lonesome over on the other side of the hotel lobby. Goes over every single detail that you would ever need to know about the Quality Inn Bricktown with them, including the hours of every single thing and the bar, which there apparently is here in this hotel. And every single one of them had the same reaction to the fact that there's a bar. There's a bar? Great! So we had to deal with that. And then I leave. I'm so angry at that point. I leave. I come back here. I pace around the room. I tell Kyle, you know what? I'm going back. I'm going to make a point. So I stand there. I'm angry for a little while. The lady literally leaps over the coffee table in the hotel lobby to unlock the door for me. And, you know, it opens up, and it's the most disappointing fitness center you've ever seen in your entire life. But still, I made my point, and that, you know, it just represents the overall quality of the Quality Inn here in Bricktown.
I gotta say, I'm not too disappointed with the Quality Inn here in Bricktown.
You have not tried the exercise room.
Well, let me say, the outside's very scary. You don't want to be walking the halls of the Quality Inn.
No.
There's some unsavory people that are staying in this inn, yeah. I'm sure of that. But once you get in the confines of your own room, the room itself is actually fine. Working fridge, working microwave,
yeah.
Working TV, bathroom's nice, clean room, pretty spacious, I would say.
Yeah.
Especially we stayed at a Quality Inn in Hoover also. That didn't go so hot. Like, there weren't enough plugs for everything. You'd have to, like, unplug the TV to get it in your computer. No, as bad as the plugs are in this room,
okay.
It was worse there. Like, literally, like, it's like... Evan's like, oh, you know, do you guys mind if I use my computer? It means you don't have TV for a little while. It's like, well, I guess you got to write a story, you know? And the air conditioning was poor at best, and it started to, like, kind of stink after a couple days, like the air that was coming out. It was just rough. I was not a fan of the Quality Inn there. This one upstages that by far as far as in the room.
Inside.
But it is sketchy. You know, to be sure,
yeah.
As far as the people that are, you know, congregating
yeah.
around it
yeah.
and
proposition.
Not a place you want to roll into at 3 a.m. or something like that.
Yeah, as we've done, as we rolled into about 1 a.m. after the
right.
Magic Cavs game the other night. Yeah, like, the inside of the room is nice. I'm never going to complain about that because a hotel is a hotel to me as far as I'm concerned
right.
in terms of the inside. But, like, I just want a little service here. And maybe
right.
a pool that has water in it. Am I asking
yeah.
for too much?
No, absolutely not. But, all right, so, you know, one of the things I like to do when you're staying at a hotel, if I got to go get some ice from the ice machine, you know, everybody's chilling in the room, you got to go grab a snack from the vending machine, left something in the car, you want to run out real quick, I won't take the key with me to the room, I'll just open the door, and I use the bolt lock thing, I'll push it, you know, closed, even though the door's not closed yet,
mm-hmm.
so the door comes to rest, so your door's, you know, got a couple inches where it's open, it's just open to the elements, you know. I'll do that because it's just easier than finding the key or whatever, wherever that may be in my wallet or whatever.
Uh-huh.
This is not a place where you want to do that.
No.
I don't feel comfortable
no.
leaving the room, leaving the door open, even a crack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want that thing shut, all the locks down. It's, you know, every man, you got to leave your man behind maybe in that situation. If I stepped out and, like, got, you know, eaten up by whatever's out there waiting for us, I'd hope you continue on without me. But, It's really, you know, it's one of those situations where you want all your locks shut at night.
Yeah, and I mean, this was only furthered by the fact that we spent some time with a friend over in a very nice hotel in downtown.
Right.
And it's like, they got a lobby, they got plasmas.
Right, yeah. The friend he's referring to is Adam Schick, who works for 850. He calls the softball games
yeah.
Along with Steve Russell out here and has, you know, throughout the season. And he's staying with the team. He's
yeah.
like, you know, he gets paid by the UAA and stuff. And they're staying in the team hotel, which is the Sheraton in Bricktown. And that place is, you know, awesome,
mm-hmm.
super nice. Low security there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they let you and me just roll up in there and take the place over with you know, out and you... any real business being there.
So. You pay for your parking or
yeah.
you don't. And,
right.
and you're clear to go, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that, yeah, that hotel, obviously, I think it was like going to be $150 a night to stay like at the media hotel across the street or
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
Something way out of our
something
price range.
Four times higher than what we're paying.
Exactly.
All right. So go ahead. Give out your Reggies and Kyles.
All right. So I'm going to give my Reggie to the UF baseball team. I was going to, you know, start breaking it down, like Piggott for coming on strong and Tucker for, you know, doing all stuff and all, but really you could go down the list and each player's done something to really help the team win. And that's why they've done so well. They're now a team of like a few stars, really. They just, everybody helps the team out and has done something to contribute. So kudos to them. You went farther than a lot of people thought you would. You're supposed to be kind of rebuilding a little bit here and you've done very well with the young squad.
Mm-hmm.
And Mykhyle Jackson is going to the Women's College World Series, but from the operational standpoint, the NCAA, the NFCA, whoever's putting this show on, really doing a poor job with everything as far as I'm concerned, especially from a media standpoint.
Yeah.
The fans got to be ticked, too, after some stuff that's happened. But all right, let's get into some specific things we have griped about. You can chime in on this stuff, too.
Absolutely.
We'll start with the media meals, which you don't like. We got into that a little bit on the last podcast. But it's really just so poorly run that it's all, like, we've eaten one media meal in the 4 days that we've been here, 5 days we've been, you know, been here. And it's not because we're being picky. It's because the hours are like, you got like an hour and a half window to get to that window and get your media meal. Yeah. I don't understand it.
I don't get it either. Like, like I said, I'm not one to complain about the media meals or whatever, but it's like, you know, at least serve it. Like,
right. Yeah,
exactly. If you're going to offer this service, follow through on that.
Exactly. All right. So that's point of contention number one. Point of contention number two, the scheduling could not be any worse for anyone. The teams can't be happy about it. I'm not happy about it as a member of the media. The fans can't be happy about it. Why, when you have two games in one day, would you schedule them back to back?
No. That's,
why would you do that?
With a 2 hour like given time for the game to be played. With TV.
It's unbelievable. Like the last time UF played, which I guess was Friday, there were two games on that day. And they scheduled them for 6 and 8 Central Time, so 7 and 9 Eastern Time. What would it have killed anyone if started that the first game an hour earlier? Could ESPN have worked that into its precious TV schedule? I mean, I know that's what's driving this thing,
yeah.
But I just don't understand why we can't do this so that it helps out the fans who come for this. Because the fans get tickets based on, I guess, when their team is playing, which makes sense, so there's turnover.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, today when we went to the field, you had Washington, Georgia fans that were sitting in the seats,
yeah.
And then UF and Alabama comes in after them. They have to get out of their seats, and the new fans come in and sit down.
Yep.
Those fans were standing on the outside rails of the concourse, standing in the heat. It's hot as balls out here. Trust me, it's like 90 degrees. There are few places to get away if you're a fan because you don't have access to the same stuff that we do, the same shaded areas and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're just standing for like 2 hours. And it's a family thing. It's like parents with little kids and stuff. How hard is it to keep track of your little kids for 2 hours in the heat? Like, I felt so bad for these parents, honestly. And they're just getting screwed. We're getting screwed because our deadlines are just getting decimated by their stupid schedule. The players have to wait 2.5 hours after when they were supposed to, when they thought they were going to be on the field, their warm-up schedules being affected, how they stay loose, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is not good for anyone. It can't be all about ESPN all the time. I know that most of the time it's all about ESPN. Maybe every once in a while you can make it about somebody other than ESPN. Yeah.
I mean, it's been all about ESPN here.
Right.
Like, they've set up separate camera wells, separate camera booths, you know, a bunch of different stations that have messed with the other media and everything.
Right.
So, like, we've been affected by it. The fans are definitely getting affected by it because these games are starting, you know, the scheduling's so ridiculous.
Right.
It's like we said, games take 2 hours, like, with no commercials if it's, like, a quick game. You know, if you're breezing through it, like, a game can end in 2 hours, you know. I guess an hour and a half is sort of, like, the shortest game I've ever dealt with
right,
this year.
Right, definitely, yeah.
But, like, 2 hours is not enough time to play a full game. Especially these games they play, you know, there's a lot of base runners, a lot of left on base, you know, extra innings potentially.
Right.
There's not enough time to play that in 2 hours with these stupid long TV
commercials. I mean, even if there might be, just leave yourself a little cushion. Like, who's it going to kill? I don't understand. Like, maybe you have John Kruk has some downtime for a little bit. I mean, you know,
I'm sure
he's going to hit up the concession stand at that point, but it's not such a bad option. I'm sure he'll live. So, the scheduling has definitely been a huge fail, I would say, for the NCAA and how they've set this whole thing up. I'm
Absolutely.
Not happy with it. I don't think anyone else is either.
I hope not. Jeez.
And the next thing that I wanted to get to with this is just, like, the way that they give the lineup cards and stuff like that. And I say lineup cards, but we don't really get lineup cards sometimes. I don't know if they're being handed out in the press box, but where there's media overflow where we sit outside the press box. Just cause, honestly, I like it better because the press box is soundproof, so it kind of distances you from the environment and everything, which is cool. It's closer to the field. You get a better angle.
Yeah, that and in the press box, that's where you start to hear the conversations about the jaded journalists
right.
talking about
You hear all these, you know, uptight journalists thinking they're all important, whatever. Like, you know, we like to sit among the people and have conversation and just, you know, have fun, take it in.
Yeah.
But
this is the first day that we got a lineup card. Mm-hmm. Instead of typing up lineup cards and printing them out, they're photocopied from the lineup cards the coaches hand to the umpires. So the handwriting is shoddy in a lot of cases. It's hard to make out the different players. How hard would it be to get a lineup card with the names and stats on the same lineup card? Like, yeah. Every other event I've ever covered for any sport that I've done here in my 2 years at the Alligator. Like, why is that so hard for them to do? This is a championship event.
Exactly. I mean, the fact that we don't have stats and that we're getting, like, you know, what's his name? Murphy and Walton's handwriting, like, on our cards. And we're like, why does Walton just use last names on his lineup cards? But Pat Murphy, you know, scribbles in the first name, last names, maybe the middle name in there somewhere.
Mother's Maiden, I think, was on that lineup card. I couldn't get a home run total, but I got their dog's name on that lineup card.
That goes along with the fact, you know, in terms of not being able to get stats and stuff on that stupid big board.
Yeah, this is point 4 or 5 now. Yeah, I don't know. Keep them running tally. But
we get the most useless information from those stupid, like, preseason surveys all the players fill out, where it's like, what's your, you know, pregame ritual? And everybody has the same one. It's like, oh, I don't step on the lines and I chew gum. And it's like, oh, that's great. That does not help me, the fans, anyone at all. Nobody cares. You know what would be great is if I knew how many home runs this person has, right, or how this person is batting in a given situation that they, you know, just happen to be in at that particular bat.
Yeah, and Chick, if you're listening, you have the best point on this. The stat, even when they put their season stats up, which is like maybe their first at bat or the first couple games they were playing, they were getting the season stats up. Mm-hmm. Three of the categories it had up there, it was hit at bats, hits, and batting average. Yeah. Batting average is a product of at bats and hits. I say you take those two out and you put home runs on the scoreboard, because they didn't put home runs on the scoreboard. They had RBIs and runs scored. Home runs, nowhere to be found.
You know what I want? I want RBIs, home runs, batting average. That's really all I want.
Those are like the three major ones. Yeah. I personally like some OBP, maybe a slugging percentage. I mean, I know that's getting out there, but maybe you could replace that with, instead of, like, you know, this person's favorite food is this, or Nikki Williams, maybe you saw her hit a couple home runs today. I can't tell you what her stats are for the year, but I can tell you that she claims to be the pickiest eater on the face of the earth. She does not eat hot dogs, hamburgers, or pizza, for all you people out there. Can I put that in my story in FCA, NCAA? No, I can't write that in my gamer about Nikki Williams.
No, absolutely not. I mean, but I could tell you that, you know, their leadoff hitter's favorite book is Twilight.
There you go. So is Asia Pakulbas.
Yeah, exactly.
All the things I learned. Last year, I learned that softball used to be called kitten ball when it was first invented and came up with.
Now, see, that to me is thrilling. Tell me more.
I wish we could get into the history of kitten ball, sure. But you guys get where we're going with this. Yeah. Like, the scoreboard's crappy. Get them a real fence out in the outfield. Here's something really insane. Now, this is crazy to the max, and this is a project, okay? But once again, it's a championship event. Maybe we can pull some strings, okay?
Not us, but people who matter.
Yeah, people who matter. This is crazy. Build up one of the other fields so you have two fields to play on.
That's crazy talk.
That's crazy talk. I know. That is insane. That can't be done. I understand that. But if you put in another field that could be played on, that could accommodate media, it could accommodate fans and stuff, that way, when you're just, you know, all over ESPN, you could tell them, hey, how about you show this one on the Deuce and we can run both of these at the same time?
Yeah, you know that ESPNU channel you have? Yeah, here you go.
Yeah, it's not getting much use. Yeah. Maybe you throw the lesser of the two games on there.
Yeah, exactly. And let's not forget that practice field that they practice on is built exactly like the actual field. It's like a replica.
Yeah, no. And, yeah, the practice fields they have are really nice. Obviously, it doesn't have, like, the seating capacity or the press box or stuff. So you put that in there. I don't know how much money it would cost. And then, boom, like, you could just cut all the delays, cut the 2.5 hour ridiculous delay we had today.
You cut the crap, sir.
But seriously, either change the scheduling or give me two fields.
Yeah.
Build into the scheduling a window of cushion where if the game goes over, everyone's deadline's not messed up, or just give me another field. You pick NCAA. Multiple choice answers here.
I mean, this all mostly goes back to the fact that they don't care about us. They don't care about print writers at all. I mean, it's all TV. It's all ESPN. So.
Right. Well, because that's where they're going to get the most – they're going to reach the most people through ESPN, not through the Palm Beach Post and Jacksonville Times Union, the Miami Herald, or whatever other papers are there covering stuff, the Alligator. Yeah. They're not going to reach as many people through those outlets. ESPN's the king of everything, and they just get whatever they want. If they want to build a booth that obstructs a ton of walk room – Go ahead, build a booth.
Yeah, and I mean, how many, I mean, in that in the defense of that, like, how many text messages and calls or whatever did we get from people who were watching the game on ESPN and saw Ali Gardner's home run? I made the joke that I felt like I just had a child. Like, I just, you know, been, you know, become a father with a number of, you know, like, oh, wow, text messages I got, you know, oh, wow, I can't believe you're covering this. Like, oh, wow, it's a boy. Like,
yeah.
It's absurd.
No, obviously, a ton of people are going to watch it on TV. But the underrated hero for ESPN, really, is Graham Hayes, who's not on TV. He's sitting there. He's writing the articles. This guy is so overworked. I want to work for ESPN. I'd take Graham Hayes' job in a second. But it's really hard what he has to do. He stays there for every single game. He writes a lengthy, like, in-depth, like, a feature-type gamer for every single game. He writes previews for the next day's games, any sidebars that they want to do. It is only him carrying the coverage on ESPN.com.
Yeah.
He does a really good job. He's a lot weaker in the press conference room than I thought he would be. Like, I've only heard him ask one question in my 2 years covering that. That was today, in which he kind of stumbled through his words and sounded real nervous.
That's
like,
what he does.
ESPN. You should just be like, yo, Graham Hayes, ESPN. Like, who wants to touch me? But he was like real nervous in a softball press conference. It was a little weird.
I covered the SEC tournament with him in Knoxville. Yeah. That's kind of what he does. He's a little
God bless him. He hasn't gotten to his head, I guess.
A little nervous.
So, anyway, he's covering it. Go on ESPN.com. You can read his stuff. It's all really good coverage.
Yeah. Man's writing like six articles.
And he actually knows what's up. Like, he covers women's sports for them, so he can tell you the history. He can tell you what happened last year. He knows the players better. It's not like Kruk, where he does baseball the whole year, and it's like, oh, you know what people would love? Let's just throw Kruk into the booth and just have him talk about softball and, like, go back and forth with an Olympian or two. Like, it's not just about fun for Graham Hayes. Like, he's got some substance to what he's doing. He knows that Kim Walzoni is actually good but got hurt, whereas Kruk doesn't. Kruk's like, oh, she's in the nine hole, so she's garbage.
Yeah.
So, you know, Graham Hayes, I think, should get some credit. ESPN's covering it well online with him, but maybe you don't get the best coverage you can get through TV.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing, how like underpublicized on the website that on ESPN.com that is, that his coverage has been. Because, like I said, he's writing like six articles a day about every team, like really in depth.
He's really doing a great job. They should get another. How hard would it be to get two writers out here for them? I mean, they have the budget.
Yeah, you think ESPN's not hurting right now or whatever. But
Graham Hayes, by the way, works for ESPN. He wears jeans and flip-flops to every game. Like, he can buy some freaking khakis and some nice dress shoes, right? Like,
maybe he's not a khakis guy. I myself don't profess to be a khakis guy.
I'm not a khakis guy either, but mostly because I'm too poor to be a khakis guy. Like, Graham Hayes, he's got to be just making it rain. So, I don't know. He's very humble. I respect that, because if I worked for ESPN, I wouldn't be so humble, probably.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I'm writing for the Miami Herald, and I feel like throwing that name a couple times in the press conferences.
So I think that pretty much covers all our gripes. Parking could be better.
I've been all right with parking.
You're all right? You're okay with parking?
I mean, there was that one day where the guy was like, I'll park up against that curb and see if it fits.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't look at us to make sure it fits. He's turned around completely facing the other way. It's
the parking people are pretty nice, but I feel like there could be more parking or more spots marked off for media so we don't have to park way away from the stadium and, you know, a spot where your Echo may or may not be sideswiped by the next vehicle that comes through.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've been all right with parking because it's free. That's the thing. There's no charge for it or whatever. So
well, for us, it's free.
I mean, for us, yeah.
It's not free for everyone.
Of course, yeah. But I'm saying for us, parking is, I mean, of course.
For everyone else, like us. Yeah.
But I'm saying for us, parking is all right.
Yeah.
I'm 20 years old. I only care about myself right now.
Right. Understandable.
But yeah, I think that about covers everything in terms of our Women's College World Series experience so far, right?
Yeah, I mean, we could expand the gripe. I could talk about NCAA.com and how they don't update their statistics for softball.
That's a joke.
Okay, here you go. This is the gripe of all gripes. Okay. Francesca Nan now has 3 home runs in her career at the Women's College World Series. As a responsible reporter, I would love to, you know, get the best statistics that I can to put in my stories. I like digging up facts. I like chasing them down. Mm-hmm. Not one of those reporters where if it's not in the guide that you're handing me, I'm not going to put it in the story. I'll calculate some stuff by hand. I'm a little crafty. I pride myself in that kind of stuff. So naturally, I want to know, Francesca Nea, she's only a junior. She got a couple more games left here. She might come back next year.
Mm-hmm.
What is the record for career Women's College World Series home runs? That is to say, you know, whoever hit the most home runs in however many trips to the Women's College World Series that they were there.
Yeah.
Can't find it. I asked Zanna Olive, who's the SID for Florida, if there's any way she could get that staff for me or where to go so I could get it. She says you can't do it. You'd have to go to every SID of every school who's ever been in the Women's College World Series and ask them to send their statistics on their leaders in the Women's College World Series. That's the only way to do it. I can't believe that. It's an NCAA sport. This is on ESPN, and I can't get the history. And then we read a friggin' AP article today, and somebody spoon-fed this guy a fact about Allie Gardner's Grand Slam was the first ever walk-off Grand Slam in Women's College World Series history. Yeah. We don't have that in our stories, and we couldn't have if we wanted to. Yeah. Like what you and me, they give you a book with every box score from every game ever played in the Women's College World Series. I kid you not. Are we supposed to sip through that and tally walk-off Grand Slams? Oh, Allie Gardner's is the first. That would take us hours.
Yeah. Days.
Get better stats.
Yeah. That's a good point. Like, the preparation that we've been given. Like, they just throw each team's media guide. No, like, current stats or anything that you might ask for.
There's a Women's College World Series record book. There's an official record book.
It's a tome. It's a book.
Yeah. It is big. And it has individual Women's College World Series records. So if I want to know how many home runs has somebody hit in just one College World Series in history, they'll tell me the best season. They'll tell me that, three is the record and X amount of people did that. They'll tell me who had the best batting average in any one World Series. Mm-hmm. But how can you not just compile those? You're obviously pulling from the same stats. Just compile those and get me a career.
I mean, it's a Mickey Mouse operation they're running here at the Women's College World Series.
I'm just upset. I'm upset with the whole thing. The event's so good in level play, the fans that show up, personalities that you get to meet because you don't watch them all year.
Yeah.
And it could really be such a much better event than it is. And I think they need to look at some stuff, make some adjustments in their game plan, and move forward and really turn this into something that's going to draw even more people and garner even more hype for these teams that make it here.
Yeah, and I feel like if it stays on ESPN, that is eventually coming because it is going to hopefully draw more attention and get more people interested.
I hope so. Yeah. I don't know. There's some stuff that has to change for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and since, as I've said on past shows, I firmly believe in ending on a bad note. I think we're going to stop there.
Everyone's upset, ready to riot.
A little angry.
Yeah. Send Lori Cannon emails. Look her up. And sue her to the NCAA. Just send her emails. About how much we're griping on this podcast.
Maybe she'll listen. That'd be nice.
Yeah, man. She probably doesn't even make the calls. It's somebody above her who's like, when's football season starting?
All right, and I think that about wraps it up for today's show. We'll be back probably tomorrow night after the game. We're going to try to get some guests on here. Can't promise anything, but definitely look out for that. And I guess
John Kruk. John Kruk will be on tomorrow's podcast.
Not quite. We'll get some Olympians Tuesday. And
if we leave a trail of cheeseburgers from here to the stadium, maybe he'll follow us back.
From here to quality and a breakdown, we'd have to have a lot of cheeseburgers to keep John Kruk's interest.
Only 99 cents at McDonald's. We can do it. I mean, the Alligator's just throwing money at us.
Yeah, we don't have the requisite funds. If we had cheeseburger money, we'd be staying down the street at the Econo Lodge, man. All right, so send any feedback to sportsatalligator.org, comment on our blogs, and thanks for listening.